You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
I love teaching the parenting meeting. I try to do it whenever I can squeeze it in, usually about once a year. My name's Scott. You guys probably know my wife, Chris. You can see my children, Sophia and Matt, ages 14 and 12 now, which is completely crazy. Some of you guys have known these two since they were born. Let me throw my glasses on here. A little bit easier to see. there we go. You can see this is the first day of school picks, 6th and 8th grade, as their fingers indicate. Here we are this fall on a family trip. My daughter is taller than my wife. My son he's within centimeters. And he likes to measure about once a week to see if he's passed her yet. I love teaching this meeting because parenting has been one of the greatest joys in my life. And I really like the topic we're discussing here this morning, how to help your kids deal with adversity, because that's super important. Like, that's one of our main jobs as parents, is how to help them deal with adversity, trials, difficulties in a broken world. You know, this is going to directly affect their ability to be happy. It's going to affect the quality of your relationship with them. It's also going to affect the quality of their relationship with God. And, speaking from a Christian perspective here, that's really important. My kids have, they're a little further along than I think most of the kids that you've got here in this room. I think it's a younger audience. But my kids, I'm really proud of them. They're sort of a little bit further down the road on dealing with adversity. This is my son. He got into running this fall, and on his own, he read a book on running because he saw Chris and I getting into it. He ran a 5K with Chris. He ran a 5-mile run with the two of us and a bunch of people from our home church. And you can just see how proud he is of himself to go out there on his own to run, he's got his little watch so he can see how fast he's going. And, it's just there's a sense of accomplishment that he can do it. He can push through the pain. My daughter also, I was really proud of her this fall. She goes to Calumet, but Dominion is our home middle school that she would go to if she was in public school, and Dominion's right across the street from Calumet now. So she went and tried out for the volleyball team at Dominion, and each day she would leave school a few minutes early. She would carry all of her stuff down to Acadia and, a half a block down to Dominion, and she would get in the back door, and she went in. She didn't know any of these girls or anyone at this school. She made friends, and she went through conditioning, and she was so proud of herself that she was able to tough this out and to work hard and to do to do something hard, to do something unfamiliar. And that you don't just go from nothing to that. There's kind of a process of working up toward feeling like I can do it, I can handle it, I'm tough, I'm not a wimp, I don't need my parents standing around me with bubble wrap and pushing everyone else out of my way. No, I can handle it. dealing with adversity. Adversity, what is it? Merriam-Webster says it's adversity is a difficult situation or condition, a misfortune, a tragedy. Our lives are going to be full of this. You guys know that. Your kids' lives are full of this. They use it in a sentence in the definition. He showed courage in the face of adversity. We had to learn to deal with adversity. Isn't that what we want from our children? Isn't this what we want for ourselves? The people that we're ministering to, they need to learn to deal with adversity. And why is that? It's because we live in a broken world, a fallen world. It's all around us, adversity. This is not heaven. There will come a day when there will be no crying or pain or tears or death, and all those things will be gone forever. But now, the ground is cursed because of you, God says in Genesis 3. All of your life, you will struggle to scratch a living from it. That sounds pretty hard. If they can't struggle against the fallenness, they're not going to make it. They're not going to thrive. It will grow thorns and thistles from all these negative things coming at them. And us, you guys know this. From every direction. By the sweat of your brow will you have food to eat until you return to the ground from which you were made. And so we're dying. Our bodies are dying. We're headed toward death. And it's this, we're going to have to work hard just to make it. And I think this is so important because what parents tend to do is they tend to put their kids in a different category. They're like, of course, I had to suffer. I had to work hard. And it's like, now that means I can pave the way for my children. And they won't have to. And it's like, is that going to be good for them? What is a person who's never struggled like? You know, how are they going to do? And, you know, honestly, this is something I've kind of wrestled with because, like, I kind of went through, like, a lot of suffering to get to where I'm at today. And here my kids are just, like, in this perfect environment. There's, like, everybody's nice at their school. They've got great friends. They've got great, you know, middle school groups now. Sophie soon, in a couple months, high school groups. And it's like, I didn't have any of that. I was so lonely. I got picked on. I was, you know, thrown in, you know, I had problems, okay? And I think that's encouraging because, you know, even if we kind of mess our kids up and, you know, they got problems and they get into stuff they shouldn't, like, a lot of us probably still had a lot worse. And human beings are kind of resilient. We've made it this far, and we have a God who is the God of resiliency. And wants to heal and wants to lead us through this. But, you know, we've got to have a vision for our kids. You know, if they're going to be successful human beings, then they've got to deal with adversity. You know, there's a time in the life of our children when we have to protect them from literally everything. And that time is known as the womb. You know, in the womb, there's a tube attached to your child that feeds them, does all the things, you breathe for them. You keep them in a perfect temperature, water, fluid bath that's, you know, whatever, 98.6 degrees. It couldn't be any better. It's the dream. And then something happens. A day comes when that child bursts into the world, and all of a sudden, things are no longer perfect for them, and they are mad. but you know, they gotta get out of the womb if they're gonna grow up, and they're gonna have to get that first shock of room temperature, even at a controlled room temperature, and they're gonna have to learn to breathe for themselves. And of course, you know, even at that age, there's still a tremendous amount of protection at that ripe, tender age. But the time is coming where we can't be for them anymore, where they're off, they're getting out of the house, they're off to school, and you know, I don't want my kid to be 40 and living in my basement. They got to fend for themselves. And then you can transition over gradually, you know, as my kids are getting into the teen years, I'm thinking more and more, it's more and more of an adult friendship, even though I still exercise an important leadership role in their lives. But it's different. And if your kids still need you, that's going to affect your ability to befriend them, for them to thrive as well. Because they're not yours, they're God's. They belong to Him. And God gives us kids so we can give them back to Him to serve Him however He wants to do. And it's not my will, but God's be done in their lives. And so there's this tension between protecting them on the one hand and releasing them on the other hand. And, you know, we need to slowly give more and more release so that they're not just hitting the world like straight out of the womb when they get to 18, because that's just not going to work. I want them more and more becoming an adult and dealing with adversity under my roof, where I sort of have a little bit more control and where, you know, they've got the time to grow up and to handle these things. Unfortunately, the style these days is helicopter parenting, where the parents are hovering around, keeping an eye on everything, making sure everything's okay, and the digital devices we have make that even more possible. Or snowplow parenting. I don't know if you guys have heard of this term, but this is where the parents are plowing everything out of the way so that my child does not have to deal with anything. And there's what could be worse for your child than snowplow parenting? You know, I think people really underestimate what kids can handle. And I think that we think they have to be much, much older. But it's like, I mean, some of us, you can think back to what you were handling at their age. Think honestly about the things you had to do. And you know, we need to apply a little bit more to them. Then go back 100 years and think about what kids were dealing with. I'm going to argue the best way to protect our kids and keep them safe is by teaching them to fend for themselves. You know, we want our kids to be safe. Tough. You got to think tough. Tough is the new safe, all right? They don't need bubble wrap. They need toughness. Because you are not some God that can be with them all the time and protect them and watch out for them. No, God is the only God who can do that. And they need to learn to run to their Heavenly Father. That's who they need. He is the Almighty One. He's also the All-Wise One, and He knows what's best for them. And He's a lot better at saying no at the right time than we are. He knows what they can handle, He's pushing them. As it says in Psalm 91:4, he will shelter you with his wings. His faithful promises are your armor and protection. And I do want to just qualify. I need to say that these parenting meetings, like, what I'm talking about here is not the most extreme cases of, you know, kids with disabilities or, you know, the most horrific experiences of grief and things like that. Although some of these things would apply. I'm sort of talking about, like, kind of the general, you know, kind of normal-ish, you know, childhood or whatever. So just to have that qualification. But God will shelter you with his wings. His faithful promises are your armor and protection. So I just love that, you know, the image of the bird, you know, kind of sheltering the baby. And, you know, that's what God wants to do. And it's like that, you know, when things are hard, I don't run to my parents. You know, when I've got a problem at work, I don't call in my parents to deal with it for me. And, but no, I go to God. And I also realize I can handle this. So you've got the mama bird kind of sheltering the baby. And that's sort of, in a sense, we're like that for our whole lives. On the other hand, birds don't just shelter. They also got to do this sometimes. They got to kick the baby out of the nest. And that could be sort of, I don't know how the bird feels. But it's like the whole life they've been under the mama. And then all of a sudden one day the mom just starts going, you know, kicking stuff up in the nest. And like, what's happening? And then the next thing they know, they're plummeting to their death. But that brief moment of plummeting to my death is essential if I'm going to learn to fly. And there's kind of something that happens in that moment where you realize I'm on my own. And our kids have to feel a little bit of that. And they need to feel it in small doses all the time. If they're going to grow, like a personal trainer that always knows just how much more weight to put on the bar, the coach knows how much to push his players, we need to do that as parents. We need to give them space where we're not sitting there holding them the whole time, and they are having that very brief, scary moment that then turns into, I can do this. You know, and they get that confidence that comes from the little bit of fear, and then I can do this. Scripture says so many times the importance of suffering in our development. Romans 5, we exalt in our tribulations because it brings about perseverance and proven character and hope. And hope does not disappoint. Don't you want your kids to have perseverance and proven character and a hope that does not disappoint? This is what resilient kids are like. They're tough. They're positive. They're like, I can do this. James 1. Consider it all joy when you encounter various trials, knowing the testing of your faith produces endurance, and that's got to have its perfect result so you can be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Do you consider it joy when your kids experience trials? You know, you're like, I believe this for myself. Do I believe it for my kids? Or am I like, no, my baby, my schnookums, not trials. It's like, why not? Why is it good enough for you? Why is it like one of the most important things in your development and they're not allowed to have trials? They're going to have trials. The question is when? After you've trained them, they can't deal with life for 15 years and then they're going to face trials? That's not good. 1 Peter, remember how he compares it to gold being refined? That's what our faith is like. You know, this is heated so hot. And you know, the gold probably doesn't like it at first. But then, you know, it's purified. And the impurities come to the top and they're removed. And the gold is more pure. And that process is repeated over and over again until the goldsmith can see his face in it. That's what God is doing. He is the goldsmith. He wants to see his reflection in us. And he's got to purify us. We don't like suffering. And I know you guys... Your parents of younger kids, and you're suffering, and there's no way around it, okay? And I was on a retreat last weekend with one of the dudes in my home church. He's got twin boys, and they're almost two, and he brought one of them. And I was just sitting there watching him, and I just thought, man, there's a part of me that's really glad that's not me anymore. You know, this kid was up at 5 a.m. and had puked on himself, and he was like, was it because he stuck his finger down his throat and he puked, or is he sick? But then an hour later he puked even more, and he was like, I can't get all my stuff because all the other guys are asleep here, and then goes home and he's puking. The other kid's puking now. Three of the four people in that household are puking. And I'm just like, wow, that's a trial, you know, but that's kind of like typical kid stuff, parent stuff. God's working in your life through this. Oh man, 2 Corinthians 4, the jar. We have this treasure in earthen vessels. The point's not the jar, the point is the treasure. And it's got to be chipped away. Paul says, we're afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Are you okay with your little one being afflicted? Perplexed. If they're perplexed, they're going to have to be perplexed. But they're not despairing, because God is there. They're persecuted. What if your kid is persecuted? God's kids get persecuted all the time. Struck down but not destroyed, they're going to have to be struck down. They're not going to be destroyed. They'll be all right. I mean, the father watched his son be struck down. The father watched his son go through all kinds of stuff. And it says, well, he saw where it was headed, so he's pleased to crush him. We had this, he says just a few chapters earlier in 2 Corinthians, we had the sentence of death within ourselves, so we wouldn't trust in ourselves, but God who raises the dead. That's how I came to Christ. It wasn't until I went through tremendous suffering as a 16, 17-year-old that I finally called out to God and came to the end of my own self and my own ways, and I saw how empty they were. Your kid might have to go through that. God is there for them. Oh, Jesus says, unless the grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Yeah, the unbroken person is lonely. It remains by itself alone, he says. You know, think about the little kernel of wheat just high up in the air, just in the sun, back and forth, just feeling beautiful, shiny. And, you know, then one day it falls to the earth and it's like, what is happening to me? Microorganisms eating my husk. This is the worst thing ever. And then, though, they bear a hundredfold fruit. That's what we need. That's what our kids need. We can't put them in a different category and shelter them from this. This is God's way in this life. There's another life coming where this won't be a thing. This life, though, it's a thing. Got all these products. Baby knee pads. For crawling around, wouldn't want their knees to get bumped. Wouldn't want them to skid out as they go from carpet to hardwood. baby helmets, wouldn't want them to bump their head as they're toddling around. Maybe you have some of these products, I don't know. How necessary is it to protect the baby, though? I mean, babies are like kind of, their bodies are all like, they're really tiny, and they're kind of like bendy and stuff. Like, God made them to learn just to navigate the physical world. Are we going to tell them you got to have padding all around you to navigate your physical world? I will say, though, I fell for this. My son was, I don't know, 7, something like that, and he's in the shower one day, and we just hear this loud, boom! And he's just bleeding everywhere, okay? Sometimes he likes to kind of slide around the tub, I think, when he's getting toward the end. I don't know. He says he wasn't doing that, but goes in, he gets several stitches. He's still got, you know, that mark on his eyebrow. But I was like, you know what? That tub is slippery. I need to get a thing to make the tub not slippery. So I go out and I buy this suction cup mat and I put it on the ground. I'm like, kids, every time you shower, you need to take it off the wall and put it on the ground. And when you get done, you need to take it off. You need to hang it up. And like, as I was doing it the first time, I was like, I don't think the kids are going to do this. I don't think they need to do this. And that bath mat, I'm glad they rejected me there. That mat just hung on the wall for a year until I finally threw it away. I was like, it was a freak accident. The tub's not that slippery. They'll be fine, okay? But it's like, I need a safety device to protect the children if I'm going to be a good parent. No, they're fine. No one's ever fallen in that tub before or since. And, yeah. So, but as a parent, you just feel like I'm a bad parent if my kid gets hurt. No, if your kid gets hurt and it's not that bad, that's great. I love natural consequences, all right? I will take all of them I can get, like, within reason. Like, obviously, there's, and I'll give qualifications later, but I want them to get as much natural consequences safely as possible, because that's how they learn to navigate the world. You got anybody read this book, The Manipulative Child? It's a great book. Virtually all of our responses have been aimed at the preservation of children's self-esteem, protection from reality and stress, rather than the goal of development of character and learning. They just document how we try to protect our kids, but then they also show how our kids try to get people to intervene in their world and keep them from pain and take the adversity out of their life. These are two doctors. They talk about treating kids that are just super fragile. Most of the children we treated found it difficult, if not impossible, to play by the rules in their lives. They were typically frightened, fearful, angry, and sullen. Rather than recognize their own failures, they blamed their failures on circumstance or on others instead of learning to accept responsibility for their lives. Universal refrains, I can't, I won't, I don't, it's not fair, it's not right, it's not my fault. For these sad, maladjusted children, failure is devastating. That's a great sentence. Do you want a sad, maladjusted child for whom failure is devastating? They often don't get along with parents, siblings, schoolmates, teachers, and when things get hard, they can usually be found asking others to correct their world for them. They will find ways, without realizing it. They're not very fully aware, but we need to lead them out of these ways is the main point of this book. Proverbs says people ruin their lives by their own foolishness, and then they're angry at Yahweh. Yeah, this is the classic victim. Ruin my life by my own foolishness, and then get angry at God and the world. We need wisdom. No, they say people learn self-esteem by overcoming difficulty. The self-esteem movement needs to get their mind around this. It's not by just endlessly affirming the person. No, we've got to teach them how to overcome difficulties. The biggest lessons we learn about our self-world come from the hardest, most fear-ridden things we do. Engineered success, easy accomplishments, avoidance of situations that frighten us, they don't bolster our self-worth. Self-esteem is built on the bedrock of many experiences that, taken together, prove our overall competence to accomplish what we set out to do. When we find the easy way out or accomplish our ends through someone else, we may feel relief or happiness for the moment, but our self-esteem suffers in the long run. Yeah. If we can manipulate someone else to take my pain away, we're like, whew, thank God, because I couldn't handle that. Instead, they need to learn to handle it. They list all these subtle ways kids get you to take the adversity out of their lives. And I'm not going to give the whole list here, but you can see the page number there of 122. Whining, crying, temper tantrums, physical aggression. Yeah, temper tantrums, we're going to have to win these battles. Kids that throw a lot of tantrums, it's probably because the tantrum works. And boy, I still remember I don't remember which of my children it was, but they were four. We were leaving some large gathering with a bunch of kids, and you know, one of the kids, the parent said, it's time to leave, and the kid just went ballistic, threw the biggest tantrum, and the parent just calmly just, you know, drug him to the car, tossed him in. And afterward, one of my kids was like, Daddy, what was up with that kid's tantrum? And I was like, I am winning as a parent. My kids recognize and despise tantrums in others. That, I am doing my job. Yeah, our kids should be like, tantrums? That's messed up. That's not how you do things. Anxious, fearful, apprehensive behaviors, like pleading and begging, and please don't leave me. Am I going to be okay? This is them inviting you to take the pain out of their life. Honestly, it's sort of funny. I've even noticed my wife will sometimes relate to me in this way. Like, you know, I would be like all worried about my teaching and oh my God, and I just want her to comfort me. And she'd be like, it's going to be, you know. At a certain point, she just started going, oh yeah. And I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. Like, it was amazing how much more effective that was for me dealing with my stuff than her trying to comfort me. She couldn't give the gift of happiness. I had to get it for myself. And if I felt like I needed someone else to bear this for me, then it's just barking up the wrong tree. Sad behaviors, doesn't smile, pouch. Passive aggressive, oh, I forgot. Or being charming or overly affectionate, to charm the people into taking the pain away for me. There's all kinds of ways. We're blind to them. I was. They also talk about blind spots that drive us to do this, keep us from seeing this, like fear of losing the child's love. You're not going to lose the child's love if you say no. You're going to lose their respect, and that's going to interfere with the relationship. They say first strive to earn your child's respect, and love will usually follow, not the other way around. We're not mean. We're calm. It's quick. It's no. And we're not going to give in to the tantrum. The parents' emotions, the parents' lack of confidence, sometimes it's more about me. Am I harming my child? Am I abandoning them? I was abandoned when I was a child. Sometimes we have these experiences and we vow, I'm never going to let my child suffer. And it's like, no. That's we need to be aware of those and not need our kids so much every second that we can't say no. This is going to be better for your relationship in the long run. Parent overload, sometimes we're just too busy and we're just like, fine. And there's just going to be times like that. But we need to make time to discipline. Sometimes the kid will try to catch us at the wrong moment in the grocery store, on the phone. And, you know, we might have a few minutes of embarrassment at Kroger. We might have to say, hey, can I call you back? I got a thing here. Boop. And then deal with the issue and then call them back. Once they learn, they're not going to win. They need that boundary, okay? They need to know they can handle it. Sometimes we're like, well, this is just a stage, you know. Like the terrible twos. So they're just allowed to be selfish for a year and we're just going to accept that? Where is that in Scripture? The child shall be given 1 year of selfishness where you do whatever they want. No, I mean, it's good to be aware, I guess, of the terrible whatevers. It wasn't just two for us. I mean, it's like the raptors in Jurassic Park, just sort of testing the boundaries. Or siblings are just going to fight. Really? Where is that in Scripture? You know, what Scripture says about the terrible twos is a youngster's heart is filled with foolishness. They need the parents' discipline. So it's like, no, like we need to teach them how to not be completely selfish like their sin, flesh, nature wants them to be. This is where our theology enters here. It's a fallen world and our kids are deep down selfish and we need to train that out of them. Parental conflict sometimes, if we're in conflict or, you know, divorce situations get really tough because you're just competing with the other spouse. And so those are challenging. Natural consequences, they're your friend. There are some exceptions. And, what book is this from? This is Raising Self-Reliant Children in a Self-Indulgent World, page 147. Immediate danger to the child. You know, I'm not going to be like, you know, the kid's got to learn not to play in the street. No, they're going to get run over. Immediate danger to another person. You know, they got to learn not to throw bricks at other kids. No, they don't, okay? Not to throw bricks through windows. No, you're going to stop that. Future delayed consequences that are pretty bad, like, well, you know, if they're just not going to brush their teeth for the next 10 years, their teeth are going to rot out. No, that's like too intense and too delayed of a consequence. Also, some little kids, they, you know, the 2-year-old, they didn't remember their lunch. Sorry, kid. It's like you're going hungry. Now, there have been times where my older kids were like, hey, I left my lunch at home. And they're like 10. And be like, all right. Well, good luck. it's you sort of got to, as a parent, you know, there's times where as a parent I'm like, you broke it, you got to fix it, but you know, I got some stuff you could do to earn some money. Or how about I pay half? You know, things like that, it's like, as a father, I just want to do the whole thing. But I know that's not good for them, but I at least want them to know, I'm on your side here too. I love you. I'm trying to help out here. And they know. They got to learn to deal with reality, you know. Keep the commandments, keep your life. Despising them leads to death. It's been said, you don't break God's law, you break yourself on it. There's the old story about the battleship in the fog. After several days of intensive maneuvers, the captain is informed, you know, there's a light on the starboard side. And the captain says, is it moving or is it steady? He says, it's steady, which meant they were on for a collision course. So he goes, send a signal. Advisable, do you change your course 20 degrees? So the reply comes back. Advisable for you to change your course 20 degrees. He's like, I'm a captain. Change your course 20 degrees. I'm a seaman, second class. You change your course 20 degrees. Send, I'm a battleship. Change course 20 degrees. I'm a lighthouse. Change your course 20 degrees. And they change their course. No matter how much he's like, don't you know who I am? That lighthouse and the rocks around it are not going to move. And if our kids are like, don't you know who I am? Get out of my... Mom, Dad, get over here. No, they got to learn. When there's rocks, you got to navigate around them. And they can do that. They'll be able to do that. How to raise an adult. They give a long list of mistakes and curveballs you must let your kid experience. I'll list a few here. I actually got a one-page handout front and back that's got their whole list. Maybe not all of them apply, but you know, not being invited to a birthday party. You know, my son didn't get invited to a sleepover recently. And all the other guys did in his cell group. And it was good, you know. And we also talked a little bit about maybe why he didn't get invited. Because he's a little too rough with the boys sometimes. He's a little bigger than them. And that was good. That was good. I was glad he went through that. The death of a pet. Breaking something. Working hard and getting a bad grade. Having the car break down away from home. Being told that the class is full. Getting detention. I remember in high school, I had forged this note from my parents saying I had to leave early. Because I didn't have my paper done. And the school could tell that it was me. They called my mom and they were like, did you tell your, does your son have a doctor's appointment today? Did you write it out? My mom's like, nope, do whatever you need to do to him. I got in-school suspension. I was the valedictorian and I'm sitting in-school suspension with all the other kids that belong there. And I was like, oh. But you know what? It was good for me. Or boy, really a formative experience. Fourth grade. I could not keep my mouth shut, constantly speaking out in class. The teacher had a system where if you got a certain number of, you know, name and check marks, you couldn't do field day. And I love field day. And I remember, like, it was 7 weeks from the end of school, and it was like, I need a perfect record to get enough demerits removed to make field day. And I got another one, and my teacher goes, well, Mr. Risley, you just lost yourself field day. And I was like, I was traumatized. And you know what? The tears are welling up, and I'm like, little fourth grade me. But you know what? I sat in the principal's office for all of field day, and it was really good for me. And that was a permanent change going forward. I'm so glad they made me stay back from field day. I was not permanently harmed. In fact, I was permanently helped by it. Not getting invited, being picked last. They got to deal with these things. There's just no way around it. A few other practicals. Awareness is the first step here. I'll just give a few others here before I wrap it up. The basic idea, you got to build a close relationship and give them space. So we got to have both. Here were a few. This is from the book, How to Talk so Your Kids Will Listen and Listen so Your Kids Will Talk. This was a great parenting book because it's secular, so you know, I don't agree with everything they got in there. What's great about this one is they give the instructions, but then they have these little comics that teach you how to do it. And so they've got things like, instead of questions and advice, oh, that's pretty small, isn't it? They say, you know, here's what the parent wants to do. Somebody stole my new red pencil. Are you sure you didn't lose it? I didn't. It was on my desk when I went to the bathroom. Well, what do you expect if you leave your things lying around? You've had things taken before. This isn't the first time. Keep your valuables off your, you know, so the parent begins a lecture. They're like, instead, just acknowledge with a word. Like, oh, I see. Somebody stole my new red pencil. Oh? I left it on my desk when I went to the bathroom and somebody took it. That's the third time I've had my pencil ripped off. Oh. You know, from now on, when I leave the room, I'm going to hide my pencil on my desk. Oh, I see. you know, part of the way the adversity things come out is the kids and their feelings, and they're like, ah, and then they want to argue with you. And if you're just like, I don't need to argue this out. They don't have to learn this lesson right now. I just need to listen. Instead of denying the feeling, my turtle's dead. He was alive this morning. Well, don't get so upset, honey. Oh, don't cry. It's only a turtle. What? Stop it. Look, I'll buy you another turtle. I don't want another one. Well, now you're just being unreasonable. Just give the feeling a name. This is part of what they need to do. Recognize this is a feeling and it's not the end of the world. My turtle died. Oh, what a shock. He was my friend. To lose a friend can hurt. I taught him to do tricks. You two had fun together. I fed him every day. You really cared about that turtle. They don't need advice. Just listen. Stop trying to fix every feeling your kid has. It's part of how we try to take the adversity out of their life. It feels unloving, but it's good. And here's the third one. Instead of explanations and logic, do you want explanations and logic when you're feeling something? I want my toasty crunchies. Well, we don't have any, dear. I want them. I want them. I told you there aren't any in the house. No. Here, have some nifty crispies. Oh, now you're acting like a baby. Give the child her wishes and fantasy. I want my toasty crunchies. Yeah, I wish we had some. I want them. Yeah, I hear how much you want them. I wish I had them now. Well, I wish I had the magic power just to make a giant box appear. Well, maybe I'll have some nifty crispies. Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, patience with your kids. Anyway, these are really helpful for me. So I thought I'd pass them on to you guys. You know, the pages from parenting books I still remember like 10 years later. Those are the ones I want to pass along. Age-appropriate chores. We underestimate what our kids can do. And one of the things a lot of the literature on this talks about is giving kids stuff to do. Kids feel completely useless. So their only job is to be entertained. Whereas it's like, you know, back in the day, kids had stuff they needed to do. Like in the farm, like the Little House on the Prairie books. Like, you ever read those with your kids? The kids were doing a lot. They took a lot of responsibility at an early age. So anyway, I gave you a handout on those. But it's got like, you know, for ages 2 and 3, maybe they can start doing this. For ages 4 and 5, maybe they can do this. So, you know, maybe just look over that and pick something, one or two things your kids can do. I don't know. Just try to give them a little bit more. having a prayer vision for your child. I remember in first grade, Sophie's teacher, Linda Robinson, she was like, your daughter is an active reporter. Which I thought was such a good term for Sophie, because she just was always saying if something was wrong, if something could be better. And I just thought, she gets this from me, okay? I need to, one, watch my own self in this area. But also, I need to pray that she would be tough and resilient. And so I started just praying, just carrying this vision to God each day on my short little prayer list for each of my kids. Active reporter. And you know what's funny? Is over the next couple of years, she became a lower and lower maintenance girl. To the point where recently we were buying some gloves for Matt, because he had lost his again. And which, you know what? I should have made him pay for some of those. but I'm dropping them off at the bus stop. And you know, this is like, I drive my kids to the bus stop. I'm like, should they walk? But here's the thing. Some days I'll drive them and then just go to work. And part of it is because as soon as we back out of the driveway, my daughter's like, who wants to pray first? And it's like this automatic lower brainstem reflex at this point. So I get to pray with my kids. I get to see them off. It's not that hard. Anyway, even though I want them to be tough. Sophie's standing there. I'm like, Sophie, do you have any gloves? And she's like, I mean, I have these. And it's like these tiny little half gloves. They're not warm at all. It's 10 degrees outside. I'm like, honey, if you need gloves, you got to tell us, okay? I feel like I'm talking to my wife sometimes with her. But she's become this low maintenance girl. And I just, when I see, you know, if you're praying a vision for your kids, then you're going to look for opportunities to develop that, to encourage that, and you're just going to be amazed at how God changes your kid. Finally, Getting Under Grace. One of these books, it's one of these non-Christian books, Raising Self-Reliant Children in a Self-Indulgent World, they point out, we're very encouraged to learn that airline pilots are at least slightly off course on 90% of the flight. The crew simply uses navigation skills to get the plane back on course. And I thought, how much more, as parents under grace, can we accept the fact that maybe 90% of the time we're like, you know, headed over here, and we're like, oh, need to get back pointed at Newark Airport, you know? So, you know, we've got to just understand we're going to have blind spots, and I think that's why it's helpful to come to talks like this, because, you know, even I'm prepping this, I'm like, you know what, yeah, I should have made him pay for those gloves. He's got money. He lost, like, the third pair. You know, we're just going to find that we need to have this vision, and then we need to keep getting under grace and just be having enough humility to admit I was wrong and I need some help. And I think, like, if you can try to do some reading, like some of these books I've been talking about here. So, conclusion, it's a tough world out there, and your child needs to be both tough and tender. You know, dense paper, cultivating a tender heart is really, that's kind of the point of this. Like, as adults, we need both toughness and we need softness, and that's what our kids need as well. As parents, we got to decide, am I going to cooperate with God as he teaches them to be tough, to have character? Happiness is not a gift you can give your kids. You can teach them the skills to live life, and then they'll be able to find their own happiness. They'll be able to go to God for that. Your kids will thank you for it someday. I just see how happy my kids are. They'll even notice, like, some of the problems that they see in some of their other friends, and it's like, What I hear from them is just how grateful that they are, that they are these happy, pretty, low-maintenance, tough kids. And I just feel like they're going to be able to do a lot, and they're really set up for success because of that. So that's what I got.
I thought it was funny their list included, like, the death of a pet.
Yeah.
Because my husband and I have joked that when our dog dies, our kid's on his own. Like, we have to deal with it first.
Yeah. Yeah, we need these two, don't we? Right.
But I was wondering, like, what level or how, as we're getting to an age where, like, parents might die or friends, like, tragedies are happening, how do you model or to what level do you let your kid in as you're also dealing with adversity?
Yeah, that's a great question. So how much of my own adversity do I share with my kids? You know, your own attitude toward adversity, they will learn so much from that, and they will do what you do. So if they see that you're, like, you know, tough and tender, then they're gonna draw strength from that. I do share struggles in my life with my kids sometimes. I'll share something I'm feeling nervous about, something I'm feeling kind of bad about. I mean, I'll apologize to my kids too when I, like, there's many times where I'll be like, my response there was out of proportion with what you did, and I'm sorry about that. And sometimes I'll be like, I think I was feeling anxious about this or something like that. So I might share that sometimes, not because I need my kids to comfort me or something like that. So part of it is why you're doing it. And, like, kind of get to, like, I need to sort of get to a point sometimes where I'm in a good place to share. But it's like, I think it's good to share some of the struggles in my life, and my kids are older now, so it's a more grown-up relationship, but, it lets them in on things. It, sometimes they'll offer to pray. Like, I mean, they knew I had this teaching coming up this morning, and they were praying for that, and, geez, we had Chris and I had sort of kind of a tense interaction. This is kind of funny. When was it? This is Monday night, right? And Chris was heading out to something, and there was sort of some tension over, like, she thought I was going to get the kids to do this, and I was like, that's not what I've had to do in the past during this time, so I didn't know, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, because that's been known to happen. But Chris walks out, and then I look over at Sophie, I'm like, a little marital tension there, huh? somebody's like, yep. But I was like, does that, I think I asked her, like, does that, how does that make you feel? And she was okay with it because she knows, like, we're cool and we got a good marriage and she's not worried about us or anything like that. But I think Sophie was the one who was like, well, you know, we got this and this and this. So, like, she could kind of see, like, some of the things. Like, when we prayed that night before bed, she prayed about some of these things, like this teaching. Like, Chris had something else coming up. So I think it's good to, like, just like I'll talk with, you know, my disciples and people in my home church and my friends, I'll share appropriately with my own kids about things. And part of it is I know my kids can handle it. There's certain things I just got to shield my kids from. Like, there's certain things that would just be inappropriate for them to, you know, partly because it's something really embarrassing about somebody they know or something that just would be beyond what they can handle. But I think we should, really little kids like you guys have, probably not. Like, but as they, it's more as they get older. So, I don't know. That's at least how we've done it. So, yeah.
I was just going to say, I know kids are very intuitive. And so when they're sad, they notice that you're sad. And I've had my kids younger, you know, be like, Mommy, why are you so sad? And, you know, and you can be able to share in simple terms. And it's like, this is something we need to pray about, you know, and just to be able to help them see that we are going through, you know, different emotions and struggles or whatever, but that we can turn to God and that God cares about us and that, you know, he's involved. And so, but yeah, I noticed that kids are very, you know, they're aware if something's wrong, you know, and it's just like to be able to help them to see how we handle that. I think that's really good about modeling.
Yeah, because I think if you can share with them a way God comforted you, that's really good because you can say, I was feeling this, I was feeling worried about this, and God showed me this in the Word this morning or something like that. So like when God speaks to you, if you can share that with your kids, that's really cool to model that for them because then they see, wow, God speaks through his Word in real ways. And my dad doesn't have it all together. My mom doesn't have it all together, but they know how to run to God, and they then hopefully learn to run to God. Yeah.
Just talking about that, my son was 3 when we lost my mother-in-law and his great-grandmother who were babysat him when I worked. And so in that case, like, we had to tell him what was going on, and she had cancer leading up to that. And I didn't want him, one, to think that caregivers disappear, because at 3 you can think that, and 2, yeah, that if I get sick, I might die. So we were very clear that she has cancer, and cancer is very sick. And, you know, she died, but she's now in heaven, and we did that with both of those people. And I think that's really important if you think about the other sides, like, oh, if you never talk about it because you're wanting to shield them, what conclusions are they going to draw about the world? So we did that. Now, things I did shield him from are things like, my brother went to prison. I'm like, a 4-year-old doesn't need to know that.
That's,
you
right,
know.
Yeah.
So it's like, we can shield him from that. But the other things that have, like, lasting implications, we, you know, explained in little terms. So.
Yeah. And it gives kids a chance to ask their questions, too, you know? Because, like, I can't remember, there was something happening in someone's life, and my kids are like, so when are you and Mom going to get divorced? I'm like, never. So it's, like, it's a chance to be, like, I remember, man, there was this incident where we told the kids, you know, we had been like getting more into camping and like our lives were really full. And, like, kids, we're going to get rid of the cat and we're also looking to give our dog away. All right. We didn't end up giving the dog away. We instead had to take more leadership to train the dog. But because he was crazy. But when we told the kids that, the kids were standing there and Matt just had the saddest look on his face. He was probably 4 or 5. And I was like, are you okay, Matt? And he goes, well, can me and Sophie still stay with you guys? And we're like, oh, no, that's different. There's a difference between my cat and you. But it's like, he's just thinking we're giving everything away now. It's amazing the conclusions kids sometimes draw, that it's their fault, and they point it back to them. So that's where we're trying to get the dialogue going and a space where they can talk about the hard things. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a question. I have a 4-year-old boy, and he, this is part with your manipulative child book, he is very overly affectionate.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, because he's like, do you love me, Mama? Or, I love you, Mama, you're the best. But
yeah.
So I was like, like he's asking me, or do you hate me, Mama? Do you love me, Mama? And then it's like, I love you so much, Mama. You're the best. You're the best. You're the best.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, in some ways it's sweet, yeah, but it's over the top.
Yeah.
It's somewhat manipulative too. Yeah. So I don't know how to come about that, because my inner thought's like, do I not say it enough? Like, does he not know that I love him? So I don't know, just how to react when he's being manipulative with it.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, one question is he, how does he do a separation from you?
Fine.
Okay. So that's good. Like, it's not like he can't be away from you. I don't know. It doesn't sound like trying extra hard to reassure him is really working. So maybe, I don't know if maybe saying a little less or something, or I don't know, maybe asking some parents that are a little closer to the situation, because there might be other things they're seeing. But it, I don't know. I mean, it's the fact that you're asking this question, wondering that, it's hard to believe that you're not communicating that enough. It sounds like it's a regular topic of conversation. But
yeah.
Oh, something he wants. Okay. Oh, well, then I'd be inclined to say no on principle and to try to break. And then, you know,
yeah,
give him the cookie at another time.
Right, yeah.
And, I'd be, yeah, of course, you know, oh no. So if he sees that it's not getting what he probably doesn't even realize he's doing it. But if he sees it's not getting him what he wants, then he might cool it on that. So, yeah. Let's do another one here.
So I have a 10-month-old, but up until I had him, I was teaching at Harambe.
Yeah.
And working with students, so I taught second grade, so they're still pretty little, and their entire lives are just filled with adversity, other than the few exceptions. And I felt like every day you're bearing the weight of the adversity that they're just constantly surrounded by. And some of it is the normal adversity that you're generally talking about. Some of it is way extreme. But I just feel like that has really helped me to form a vision for, with my parenting and my kids, having the specific vision that I want them not to learn this just for themselves, but to be a light going out and being the example for their friends. Like, my hope is that their only friends are not just going to be kids in the church who are, you know, being taught the same things, raised the same way, but they're going to be out in the world, and they're going to be kids that are resilient, where their friends are looking to them like, how are you like this? And they're able to point that back to God. But even like from a young age, like, I don't know, like second graders are amazing in so many ways, but they start to get things. They're like talking about God, they're questioning life. And so like, I don't know, it's easy to sit in this talk with a 10-month-old like, oh, later, but it really does start from day one, and we can have that vision from infancy. Like, our kids are gonna be in the world, they're going to be a light. We can raise them to be different, and even second graders will notice that.
Yeah.
And that can be something that we can pray for our kids in light of this conversation.
Yeah, you know, we really underestimate kids. We really underestimate second graders. And it's interesting, like, those of us that are teachers or, you know, working with student ministries, like, we see a lot of kids, and you see a whole spectrum of kids. You see the completely sheltered kids that can't do anything for themselves and completely lack confidence and are anxious wrecks. You see some kids who have had maybe too much adversity and weren't protected enough, but it wasn't because the parent didn't get in front of them and move the mean kid out of the way. It's probably because they got, you know, neither parent's involved, or at least one's not involved. I mean, those are the more, like, you want to protect your kids from adversity, you know, make sure your marriage is good. Like, and things like that. So kids who've had, you can just see the kids that have been taught, you can handle it. And some of the kids, they just had to handle it, but that's okay. So we want our kids to be tough. That's the point. All right, back there.
Yeah, you mentioned the instance between you and your wife when you had like an instance of tension. But I'm wondering your opinion about if you have to have or stumble upon when you and your spouse are in conflict. Like, I have vivid memories of as a child, like, you know, leaning in and spying on, not spying, like, visually, but
oh,
like,
yeah. I remember
behind
that.
Closed doors, like, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
And, you know, loud whispers.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. Do you have advice about...
Okay, here's what I would say is the kids are going to see the fights. Sometimes I think it's appropriate to talk to them later about how you resolved. So I think sharing, if they only see the fight and then everything's fine, like, I mean, I guess that's fine, but like sometimes I think it can be appropriate to share the resolution. Because, you know, when mom and dad are not doing well, that's one of the painful things in our kids' lives. They're going to have to learn to deal with that. There's times where my wife and I are not doing too good and where they suffer some for it. But I think sharing about how we resolved the fight that they saw, I think, is good. And again, like I know I shared that example. That's I don't know how much of that's a model that we should go by. That was just 2 days ago. So and my kids are older, but... I think sharing with them some of the resolutions and some of like the a lot of times after it's all done, you're in a better place to share with them what happened than when you're in the midst of it, when you're kind of crazy. At least that's for me anyway.
Yeah, we've had apologize too to them as like, you know, I just overreacted there, or, you know, to be able to own up what we did wrong, I think is good.
Yeah. And the kids will say they're sorry. And I've noticed that my kids are pretty good at apologizing. There's times where it's like my teenage daughter will be like angrily storm out and mad about something. And then later that night when I'm tucking her in, she's like, Daddy, I'm sorry I was being grumpy earlier. I'm sorry I was being this way earlier, which I think is awesome. But it's like my kids, they know. I just remember my kids knowing how to go to their room and get their emotions under control. They just do it on their own. I'm like, wow, that's cool. I couldn't do that when I was your age. All right. That's probably good. How about I just pray for us? Well, God, you're the brilliant creator, and you made us with knowing that this fallen world is coming, and you came up with a plan to even use the negative things in this world to grow us. And as Christians, you use these even more. And you say that you cause all things to work for good for those who love you and who are called according to your purpose. And that's what I want for my kids. I want them to love you and be called according to your purpose and to get maximum benefit from the pain in their lives. And I don't want to interfere with what you're doing. I pray for these parents here whose kids are a little younger than ours are, that they would teach their kids toughness and really get out of the way so you and this world can teach them the toughness that they're going to need and the resilience that they're going to need so that they can someday find you, draw near to you, and be that model, like Ali was talking about there, to other kids of resiliency. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.